Hello and welcome to Wax Lyrical, the advertising and marketing podcast from Wax On and the Marketing Society. I'm Mark.
And I'm Ben.
And I'm Zach.
And I'm Dan.
And in this special climate change episode, we'll be talking about Fridays for Future and climate strike, loads of environmental campaigns, and some amazing related creative work. So perhaps it's too late for us to do a climate special, but we're here anyway. I think we should have been doing it years ago. And I'm very pleased to welcome two guests today who know much more about this stuff than, well, certainly I do. Ben, you're pretty up on climate stuff.
Well, I have, you know, lots of people who I know work in that sort of in that world, so they've sort of pushed it on me.
which is Zach and Dan.
So yeah, my name's Zach and I'm a co-founder of an organisation called Glimpse. We work with the creative communities to use their skills on social and environmental causes. And obviously, there is nothing bigger when it comes to social and environmental cause than the climate crisis.
And it's very timely, and we're going to come on to this because there's something happening this week, if we've got the broadcast of this podcast right. And Dan, hello.
Hello. So I'm Dan, and I co-founded a thing called Good for Nothing about 9 years ago, and also an independent consultant under the Spaceship Earth consultancy. And I guess I've been immersed in this stuff for a while, trying to figure out how do we creatively respond to the chaos and destruction that our modern world is causing in the world.
And the first thing that's happening, or the first things that are happening, are these events, Fridays for Future and Climate Strike. Where shall we start on talking about them?
Shall I kick off on that a little bit? So I guess if you might have noticed that the young in our society have been getting out on the streets in the last few months, inspired originally by Greta Thunberg out in Sweden, but this movement has been building all over the world. And just a bit of context to this, I mean, I've been going out on the street with my son since the start of the year out in Bristol. We've been climate striking, and the idea of the school strikes is that basically a growing number of kids are saying, what the hell's going on? Like, the science is telling us we need to kind of rapidly kind of refigure how we live on this planet, and it feels like our politicians and world leaders aren't really listening. So they've started striking from school, and the reason they strike from school is because if you strike from school, you get attention. It's that simple. You walk out of school and people go, why are you not in school? So anyway, these strikes have been growing, and through our Good for Nothing project, we've been trying to help the UK strike movement since earlier on this year, just with kind of communication support. And then in June this year, have collaborated with Zach and James and the whole Glimpse Collective in a collaboration to try and help the UK movement mobilise 1 million people, which is next Friday now, which is slightly scary because it's all gone quite quickly. What we've been doing there is thinking, well, how can the creative networks, creative industry, how could they help get 1 million people out onto the streets, which is what the young people have asked for. This isn't us sort of imposing this on them. The youth have been asking for the adults to step up. So we've been running an experiment since June, July this year, which was, can we use our sort of creative genius and all these agencies and networks and studios to apply some of those superpowers to helping mobilize people for next Friday? And we ran a series of challenges, which involved an open brief, which we put out, we're working with the youth strikers in July. We ran a 1 day creative sprint also at the end of July, where we had we had people from all kinds of different agencies and studios and freelancers. And we've basically created, and we've been sort of Sherpering this process, I guess, over the last 2 months, and load of projects which range from, you know, typical things like communications assets and digital things that you can spread and share with your mates, through to projects involved, you know, we've got an art strike going on where we're trying to get museums and galleries to put objects of art on strike. We've got a thing called
taking them away.
Well, it means putting a cover over art for the day. To just signify this whole idea. I mean, their insight there was, you know, we don't know what we've got till it's gone.
As
I'm thinking. There's a thing called Raise the Alarm, which is challenging businesses to literally do fire drills at 1 p.m. next Friday. And that, you know, it's an easy way to get your people out the building for half an hour at 1 o'clock, because all the young strikers are going to be ringing alarm bells at 1 o'clock next Friday. So that's going on, even through to an amazing initiative called Create and Strike, which is a specifically targeted at the agency world, which is, you know, which has got about 50 agencies now. CEOs have signed it to support their staff to strike if they want, and to create something interesting to take out onto the streets next Friday. So there's a ton of stuff, and we're now, that's out in the world under FridayFuture.love. You can find all of this content, all of these projects.
We will put all the links into the podcast thing. But before I talk to Zach, you started off, I don't have kids. Why do you think it's the kids who are driving this?
Hi, I'm out of the office because I'm out of patience and we're out of time. This is a climate crisis. So I'm out on strike, out of class, out of home, in the streets, for climate justice, for real solutions, for all of our futures. Join the climate strike. Are you with me?
I think they see the world in a very different way to us. They're very open. They see, they have a kind of a moral kind of clarity, I think, that maybe we struggle to see, because many of us are so entrenched now in, you know, a view of the world which we see as normal, which is, you know, business as usual, effectively. And I think they're looking at what's happening in the world. They're seeing their future in quite a bleak way, actually. And I think they're getting out the street and they're speaking the truth to power in a way that maybe is harder for us that have been, you know, we've been institutionalized almost with how we see things.
But I wonder if we've lost touch with nature.
Oh, with that—that's without doubt. That's definitely. We're very separate, I think, from how stuff actually works in the
world. So, how is it that they have managed to be connected with it, and, you know, our generation then isn't? What's happened?
I mean, is it that you start connected, and then as you get older, you disconnect?
You disconnect.
So it's not that you have to kind of learn your love and connection with nature. You, I think, you know, you start from a very young age being, you know, the joy of playing out in the park, playing, you know, climbing trees, etc., is an intrinsic natural instinct, and then as you get older, you distance yourself from that further.
Is it an evolution thing as well, that society has forced? I mean, you know, we're going to move into that place about we're obsessed with our phones and everything else, and we've lost touch with reality.
I think there's bits of all of this going on. I'm not sure all the young strikers are. I think some of them are seeing the you know, the inherent relationship with the natural world is broken. Right. But I think others are seeing it from a kind of social justice point of view, that actually, you know, rampant consumerism and industrial growth society is really not working for the most vulnerable in our culture. And, you know, those that are suffering the most already from climate breakdown, ecological breakdown, are those that generally contributed very little to the problem. So I think there's also this big social justice thing that's building in the youth movement. It's not just this destruction of the natural world and our sort of life support systems. It's also like, this model is really, really, you know, not working for most people. It's only really benefiting a few in our society. And I think they're looking at that and seeing, you know, the breakdown in jobs, the breakdown in careers. I mean, I think they're joining the dots, actually, on a lot of what is broken.
is it because obviously when we were growing up, like, yeah, you're born into nature, but then anything you learn about nature becomes about education and about school, and about it has a different tone to it. So it's not seen as an important thing. At that particular time when we were growing up, it was all about sort of, you know, that there was an age of rampant consumerism. And actually,
don't forget, I'm a slightly different generation.
Okay, fine, thanks. You know, I think it's probably even like potentially even more sort of distant for you. Potentially, like, I think when we were at school, nature was seen as like learning at school. It wasn't something.
No,
as like
I was living in it.
Okay,
it's not an arrogant thing. I mean, so one of my uncles was a gamekeeper.
Right,
my dad was a butcher. So I had that kind of really, you know, I can't explain it. What does that mean? It meant I knew where my food came from. I understood all about it. We had a chart on the back of the pantry door of all the animals that my dad had brought from the butchers, the pig, the cow and the sheep and all that kind of stuff. So I knew all about meat and how it was produced. And my dad told me really odd stories about killing animals. You know, he explained in intimate detail how cows had a bolt shot through their brains or they were electrocuted. I was brought up with all this. No wonder I need therapy.
Yeah.
You know? And the best animal to eat was a pig, because you could use absolutely every little bit of it.
Yeah.
But
there's a I was at this DNAD thing last night, and I shared this I think like there was a brilliant systems thinker called Gregory Bateson, and he had this phrase which is like the biggest problems we have, you know, or something like this: the biggest problems we face in the world are down to the difference between how people think and how nature works. And we've built an industrial growth society based on a way of thinking about the world which is inherently different from how the natural world works. And let's not forget, you know, ecology owns economy, and so this is where we're at. You know, we're on a sort of pathway which it works on a different set of principles to how the operating system for life, which is how the natural world works. And I think that's what we're, you know, the crisis we're seeing is kind of nature meets culture. That's the crisis we're in right now.
Zach, tell us about Glimpse, please.
So Glimpse was this idea to bring together kind of creative communities and kind of professionals to see if they could use their skills on kind of social and environmental causes. The thinking was that my business partner James Herbert found when he worked at Greenpeace that a huge amount of creatives would come and want to work for Greenpeace. It's one of those kind of flagship accounts. Lots of opportunity to do kind of cutting edge work, but Greenpeace can only do so much kind of creative work. And there's this kind of huge amount of kind of outpouring of kind of goodwill and kind of creative talent that's not necessarily being applied to kind of some of the big issues. And so we thought, could we use that pouring and create campaigns and kind of create an organization that acts as a way for these people to kind of use their skills on stuff that isn't about kind of selling toilet block or the latest version kind of Persol 2.069, those kind of inane kind of marketing briefs where you're kind of again coming up with a way to reinvent the same product year on year. And so that campaign, that kind of insights, could you apply the kind of creative nous to something that was more than just kind of selling products, was the kind of starting point for Glimpse. And we did this experiment where we got together lots of kind of creatives and got everyone in a room and set ourselves a brief, which was about the thinking behind it was, could we find a way to kind of challenge kind of consumerism? And this was all an experiment and this kind of very cathartic kind of session for lots of marketeers and creatives to get together and spend the day kind of talking about, you know, what was wrong with consumerism. And off the back of that came this idea that could we kind of, you know, by challenging consumerism, what was the key channel that kind of encourages rampant consumerism? And it was called advertising. And again, it was this big kind of therapy session, everyone talking about why they hate advertising, even though they all work in advertising. And so we thought, could we take over ads and create a campaign where we replace all the ads somewhere where ads are like really prevalent, which was in the tube. And this campaign was born, this idea that we would take over the ads in a tube station and replace them with images that didn't make people feel they needed to buy anything, that had no call to action, that just brought a smile to people's faces and made them feel calm in their public spaces and showed that, you know, spaces could be for each other. And of course, being marketeers, we came up with this idea, what would be the ultimate thing that you could put on these ads that would get people talking and smiling? And of course, there is only one thing that, you know, ignites and unites the internet like nothing else, that gets everyone kind of talking and smiling, and it is of course cats. So we crowdfunded to replace all the tube stations in Clapham Common Tube Station with pictures of cats, unbranded, no call to action, just for the hell of it. And it became this huge...
I was living in Clapham at the time.
Oh, brilliant. It became this really kind of amazing, and it was an experiment, and I think, you know, we'll talk about that a bit more, and it's something we've worked on a lot with Dan, is we don't necessarily know the answers to a lot of these things, but a lot of this is about kind of creative experimentation, getting people together to see how they can use their skills for something above and beyond just selling stuff. And it started off as an experiment, and we then came up with another idea, which was a shop where you couldn't buy anything for yourself, but you bought for others. And that was something we did with Help Refugees, and it was a store called Choose Love. And then it's just kind of snowballed, and now we try and really bring kind of the commercial creativity that is often applied to kind of products and things that, you know, are part of the problem, and apply that kind of positivity and creative flair to social and environmental causes.
So I'm going to go for the obvious jugular, if I may, and start by saying that outside of our advertising bubble, people look in and think we're using our channels and our skills to just self-aggrandize ourselves. Do you see what I mean? As in, so they see all of us gathering in Cannes and celebrating loads of really expensive films about environmental stuff made by really famous directors, and we're patting each other on the back, but are we actually making any difference?
Cats as an example, what was the, just to we talk about the campaign a lot. But what was so amazing about that campaign is we got a lot of emails and tweets from young people who said they didn't know that someone could take over the ads space and, you know, take over a public space. They thought ads were controlled by big brands. And, you know, it showed that it was an experiment that could empower people. I think that's the next level of kind of creative work. And we've got some examples we'll talk about later, is actually creating work not for the kind of, you know, for rewards, not for recognition, but going out in the world and actually doing something that and demonstrating to people that they can do it too.
Dan, how do you think we do it without being preachy? Because I think that's probably what puts people's backs up, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess this whole area of what, you know, like creative courage. That's what I would explore, and like working off brief. And I think if we can only express our creativity through paid briefs currently right now, through our kind of client setups or the agency marketing relationship, I think we're going to continue to struggle. I think things like Glimpse are things like, you know, our platform Good for Nothing. You know, Good for Nothing was set up to just try and help, again, like create spaces where people can experiment with their creativity, where there isn't a client, where there is, where you're sort of smashing the kind of hierarchy and that kind of sense of, you know, the power dynamics, I guess, of who's controlling the process. And so I think we need to have the more of this stuff going on, and I think that in turn will start to impact this kind of client agency relationship as well in a good way. Yeah. Because people need to be able to express themselves, and I think they need to find ways to use all this talent and firepower that exists within this industry, but also not be judged as well, and also get out of this awards thing and, like, yeah, you know, that can only be creative and I have to win an award for it. And, you know, when we started Good for Nothing, we ended up, one of our most interesting projects that happened with Good for Nothing is we started working with these filmmakers who were making a film about the disconnection kids have from nature, what's been going on. And we, you know, we ended up running a 2-day. I mean, Good for Nothing does a similar thing. It brings people out and creates these kind of spaces for people to use their creativity in a different way. We have tended in the past to focus on existing projects, but that are doing something awesome in the world, but have very little resources. So it's the kind of like, so in this case, it was two filmmakers making a feature length documentary, and their take, the documentary was kind of, they ended up self-appointed, the guy, it's called Project Wild Thing now, the film got released, but at the time it was called the Nature Film, and it was a guy who was basically trying to self-appoint himself as the marketing director for nature, because he'd come to the conclusion that his kids were just being marketed so much by brands that they weren't going outside. And we love that idea, so we basically convened about 50 people for a weekend to help these filmmakers blow this idea up. We ended up in the film, we ended up helping them launch the film, we ended up on, you know, he ended up on Newsnight, we ended up with an independent picture house cinema release. The film then birthed a network, a movement called the Wild Network, which still exists, which is its mission is to rewild childhood. And all sorts of people helped that happen. And we didn't know, we didn't have really a brief, we didn't have any money, we didn't know where it would go. But so much happened when people were given the permission to play in that space, you know, and we had writers, filmmakers, and, you know, every type of skill set came and got involved in that process and still remains involved in it. And so I guess it's this, like, the world I think many people are wanting to see emerge, I think is only going to happen if we give ourselves permission to start co-creating and start participating in this stuff rather than waiting to be
briefed,
right?
What about CMOs? And I'm just worried that I can't do what you guys want me to do, even though I know I should be doing it and hit my sales targets and all that kind of stuff. I just don't know what to do, and I feel alienated from your community as a result.
Well, I'm really sorry. That's how you feel.
Nice start.
Yeah. I would think, you know, the first kind of, you know, challenge is acknowledging that there's a problem and there's this kind of paradox that everyone is, you know, is struggling with. I think this is the key point, that because we're struggling with it, people feel like we can't talk about it. And we talk a lot about this at Glimpse and with Good for Nothing, is this kind of concept of the hypocrisy of it all, that how can I talk about climate change when I'm running a business? How can I talk about sustainability when I've got targets? And we talked about this in our kind of pre-chat as well. It's like, we don't necessarily know all the answers at this stage, but we want to people to kind of start talking about it, exploring new ways. I would say to CMOs listening is, you know, remember, you know, what's interesting about the kind of new culture and where we're hopefully moving to, or the only solution that we're moving to, is starting to kind of see themselves, their personal and professional lives, as the same thing. I think for too long, or maybe all the all I grew up with, and for the last 100, 200 years since industrialization, business has been business, and, you know, your personal life is your personal life, and you can have a belief and do something totally different in your work. And we're trying to say that actually you can start to bring those together. And the solutions are kind of forming and bubbling up, but I think we've just got to keep looking for them, would be the point. And if you do feel guilty, or you feel like you don't know how to engage with it, that's still a start. And we would invite you to kind of, you know, keep listening, keep talking, keep kind of the conversation, the dialogues open. I think that's the key starting point. But I don't have a direct answer to solve this right now.
And I was going to say that I think there's a nervousness I hear from my CMO kind of, or marketing friends, of getting it wrong. If I do start doing something, what if it goes wrong? And it's almost like, you know, it's better to do nothing and not get it wrong.
Yeah, I think that whole thing is like, it's the shift between a more agile, experimental way of looking at the world, which is actually what life is doing all the time. You know, in our bodies, we've got billions of cells constantly experimenting. You know, everything is like that, but we're so stuck in a more kind of logic-driven, process-driven way of doing things. So how do you carve out some experimental stuff within all of that? You know, how do you sort of create a project or a stream of work that allows you to experiment more, that doesn't take your eye off the ball of what it is, but how do you experiment more to understand what might be possible? I think for me also, it's like, you know, working from the heart more. You know, what's your heart telling you? You know, bringing people, unusual people, into your business. So
into
I think starting to listen more to different perspectives that are connected to your business or your brand or your product. You know, there's a whole system of relationships that are going on around your product. You'll have activists, you'll have fans, you'll have suppliers, producers. You've got, you know, all these different perspectives. Bring different voices in, listen more, and then start to experiment a bit. You know, and I think
people, that kind of stuff as well.
I think if you're humble and honest about this stuff, people are crying out for more businesses to start being more courageous, and not in a way of like, we've solved the problem, but just being more honest about the reality but doing it through action rather than just talking about it, you know.
And I would say also is supporting each other in that goal. I think one of the other challenges is, you know, no one knows the answers and everyone's afraid to fail, and part of that is because their communities or their peers have a go at them if they fail, that's our problem, and one of the things that we talk, you know, talk, it's like, you know, what are the kind of greenwashing, you know, greenwashing I totally get, and is right that it exists, but it's also become this baton that we bat each other over the head with for whenever someone gets it slightly wrong, and therefore it's like, I'm so worried I'm going to get accused of getting it wrong by my peers that I'm not going to do it. And again, is this more open kind of conversational, experimental way of doing this is how we'll find the solutions. And as long as you're honest and authentic about that, you don't have the final answer, you're still trying to go in the right direction, I think. And yeah, it's feeling that we're all part of this, so therefore support each other. That's not to say like, don't call bullshit out when it's bullshit.
I really sense that so many, particularly younger folks, they're looking for a different way of working. They're looking for something that's more honest. And so I think if you can create the conditions, some scaffolding to support that messiness, which is all possible, and an acceptance, a trust of that way of working, I think we might see something amazing happening as well. But it's willing to go there. I'd also just quickly on the brand, I would love to see more marketeers and brands trying to look at the problem outside versus their problem. So become conveners around the issues that their product category or their brand is facing, rather than just trying to solve the problem for them as a business. Like, look at the problem in culture, society, environment. What's the thing that's really actually the tension building now around their product, whether it's just, you know, whether it's waste, whether it's packaging, whether it's, you know, whether it's actually the product is causing problems, you know, there's a mental health thing, whatever it might be. Like, acknowledging that the problem out in society that your product or your brand is actually quite clearly playing a role in, it, you know, convene around that problem. Like, don't try and solve it just for you. Try and bring
solve
people
it for
around
everybody.
Solve it for
yeah.
everyone.
And I was very humbled by an experience I had when Ben introduced me to a brand called Tony's Chocolonely, which I had never come across. You're both
That's
nodding. Yeah. yeah. And the fact that their ambition is to change the whole category,
yeah.
not just change for themselves, which that's when I learned what this was all
right.
about, Dan. I kind of got the message. Do you think that some brands are kind of getting it right? Let's talk about some of the big ones. So I was lucky enough to hear Paul Polman talk at a kind of a small event, and I believed what he was saying, that Unilever was actually genuinely focused on a mission to try and ensure that everybody in the world had access to clean water. And he was saying, so that's my emotional objective. My commercial objective is clearly that water is an important part of lots of Unilever's products. So there's a kind of a quid pro quo there. Do you think that's acceptable?
Well, I'd caveat with, you know, my previous comment was not to kind of pick holes in each other's campaign. I think what they're doing, and you know, it's really admirable that such a big brand, you know, such a huge conglomerate is thinking this. And I suppose it's the wider issue is that this, you know, is this kind of, which is the elephant in the room, which is consumption and consumerism, and the sheer level is that what we also need to look at is not just sustainable products, recycling, etc., but it's the level of consumption that these brands are still pushing. Unfortunately, that's so I think they're moving in the right direction, and therefore I would applaud them for it. But the next step really is to start thinking it's not just about a sustainable product or whatever. It's like, how do I, in essence, I used to call this term like demarket my product. Like, how do I get people to use it a little less? Because I need, you know, the thing with the Unilever products is they still want to push more and more and more and more products. Now, their product is better than another product, but they're still encouraged telling you that you need six different washing up, you know, you need a spray for your top, a thing to go under the sink, a thing for the toilet, you need a deodorant, you need a shampoo, you need a conditioner, you need a moisturizer, you need a, you know, and then you need something to wash them all off inside the kitchen. But luckily it's, you know, it's, there's too many of those things. And what, you know,
well, you are touching on the issue, because in the same speech, Paul Polman said he felt that he was handcuffed by the city's insistence on quarterly reporting, which meant that they, you know, that the eyes were on his numbers every 90 days.
Yeah.
He said, how can a CEO really steer a business into a different direction if every single move literally I make is being measured? And he stopped doing it for a while, but he didn't stop doing it. In the end, he was forced to cave in and he had to go back to quarterly reporting. So now we get into a big, what I was going to say is a Marxist debate.
Well,
about can we change the whole system?
But I think, I mean, this takes us back to the nature piece again. You know, like, we've designed a system which is destroying life on Earth, right? And a big part of that is this model of production consumption, materials driven society, a culture of excess, and, you know, progress through whatever, you know, as much as you can obtain on the journey, and getting ahead of everyone else, and seeing nature as a resource, and all these things are sort of built in as design principles to this society. So if we're really realistic, if you know, something big has got to shift quite quickly, and sort of rampant consumerism as the core idea in our culture is clearly that, because it's not just the emissions that come through that, but it's literally, you know, our ecosystems are crashing at a rate where, you know, food production for the world is being threatened, you know, and that's the kind of thing that's going to affect this country. You know, we've got 60-odd% of our food is imported. We're trying to leave the EU. Most of it comes from the EU. I mean, you know, it doesn't take much to figure out. You have a couple of global, drops in grain production, and you've got famine on your hands, you know, unfortunately, our system, and again, it's no one's fault, right? We've been born into this. But the reality is, the amount of death that happens to get everything, you know, you walk out the door, right, in a modern world like London, right? you buy this, you get on that transport. The amount of things that died for you to have that thing, even if they're sustainable, you know, there's extraction involved, there's pollution involved, there's, and we're sort of starting to understand that now, you know. So I do think there's going to have to be, what are we going to let go of? What, you know, to Zach's point, what, where do we say, actually, this product category needs to die? You know what I mean? If we want a future.
So the FMCG basically is where it all, because it's the speed of consumption. And it's, that's huge. Like Patagonia, for example, is slightly different because they're like the cycle of purchase.
Right.
You don't buy a Patagonia product all the time.
Right. And it's built to last.
It's built to last. But yeah, it's that low. It's
hyper-consumption.
That hyper-consumption
but,
stuff.
But what I'd also say to the CMOs, this thing is, it doesn't mean like this is this big thing out there and it's kind of all or nothing. And we're suggesting, you know, it's a progression towards this system, and we need to find the solutions to get there. And by talking about it and acknowledging it and still doing their job of, you know, selling a product, you can do the two at the same time. Is that we know that overconsumption, rampant consumerism is killing the planet. We know we need to stop that, and we need to find some solutions. We can have that conversation and still feel legitimate in having that conversation and still be trying to make a living and finding a way.
So do you think
we've got to try and bring the two together? Mm-hmm. And to me, it feels like they're two ships that we're trying. We've got to bring them together quickly, but you don't have to be, doesn't mean that just, you know, if you work in FMCG, you're the devil, like that something terrible, you're doing something terrible. Like you're still, you know, you didn't make the problem. You're trying to find a solution.
Right. Do you think we could go further up the kind of chain and talk to the investment community, because that's probably where the, well, not probably, that's definitely where the pressure's coming from, isn't it? Because, you know, I'm a CMO, I'm not, but anyway, I'm playing that role.
Yes,
today.
Yeah. You're doing it really well.
And my CEO is under pressure from his shareholders, and that's what I mean. Yeah. So I mean, how well do you think that message is getting through to the investment community?
I think there's work going on in every part of our systems. There are people like, you know, there are interventions, there are movements, there are people, and more and more people are facing into this because they're connecting emotionally now. I think finally people are starting. And I think you have to, you know, Extinction Rebellion talk a lot about this, but you have to connect emotionally with the problem. You have to, if you just hold it in your head rationally, you're still not really accepting what the science is screaming at us, you know. So if we get behind the science, if we say we believe in that, then you have to connect emotionally that, you know, by the way, you know, like generations before, you know, they had the war, right? Well, we've got this. This is what we've got on our watch.
I mean, a really good metaphor, you know, to kind of put alongside.
Because I think we've had it quite easy. Like,
gosh,
you know, so it's like, but you know, that's, I think we discover, you know, life is this crazy adventure that we're on and this crazy journey. And guess what? This is what we've got to deal with, right? It's on our watch. And I think we have a privilege. Those of us that do have privilege, which is a lot of us in this industry, I think we have a moral right now to do something, because the people that are suffering the most right now from this are the people that have really created, who've contributed the least to the problem. It's coming our way, by the way, but I think we have that. And I think to Zach's point, it's not about demonizing, it's just an acceptance. And we need a level of cooperation and joined up intentional stuff that doesn't exist, I don't think, within these
sectors.
So again,
do you think we're looking at it at the wrong place? So what I've learned from what you guys have said this morning, so tell me if they've got this right, is we really need to be talking about a lifestyle reset.
That kind of word, consumers, is, you know, I just think is such a terrible word.
People.
That's existed most of, yeah. First of all, let's like
to
a moratorium.
Humans.
Yeah. To humans, but yes, that's what they are. You know, it's people, you know, people working in business, people selling products to each other, people eating things, people doing things. And I think for us, what we're really interested in, Glimpse, is a shift away from being defined by what you buy to a shift being defined by who you are, where you go, the friends you keep, the things you like doing. And that's one of the, you know, the ways that the reset is just, you can still, you know, is commerce and people going, you know, the systems will still work. They just need, you know, realignment, or, you know, a new form of alignment that gives people the opportunity to be less defined by how much stuff they buy and more defined by other things that are less resource intensive and less, you know, causing this damage.
And I think well, again, there's lots of different roles and lots of different things that people can be doing. You know, again, we need lots of different stories around this. I don't think, again, it's like do this or do that. It's like, I think, you know, what you're seeing in the sort of advertising industry right now in the UK, there's been these interventions that started with the XR letter. There's lots of stuff there's a space that's been opened, and there's all kinds of stuff going on, stuff that I'm involved in, stuff that Zach and James are involved in, loads of other great platforms and organizations who've been actually doing, like we have for years, been trying to sort of, you know, raise the alarm a little bit, but not really getting anywhere. What the XR stuff has done is opened up space. If you look at just in the ad sector, it's like, how, you know, communications defines a lot of what people feel is behavior and, you know, culturally acceptable, right? So, you know, we should be looking at, like, you know, I think, you know, at the moment it's like, it's cool to sort of like show shots of your on a plane, you know, looking down and stuff, right? We got, I mean, that's just an example, but there's lots of things that could, we could change through the way we think about how we create content, how we create communications. There's a load of work that's going on into the TV sector. There's some amazing people that are looking, talking to program makers about, you know, how do you bring this stuff into programs, into content, into culture, you know? So it's happening. It's all kinds of plays that need to go on. But I think if everyone starts to accept, you know, just if you're still struggling to accept and you think, oh, it's just a bunch of hippies, whatever, just trust the science. Like, on one hand, we put science up here and say we want our kids to study science and but then when we look at climate and environmental science, we're like, you know, just get behind the science. If we get behind the science, and then everyone starts to bring that into their work, into their day, say, okay, what could we do differently here? How could we chip away at this? How could we change our product? If we are to vision a better thing beyond, you know, if we are accepting what's happening from a crisis perspective, we need some amazing visioning work that shows, helps people see why living with less is better, and why a different type of life where, you know, maybe we're more about working less, spending more time with each other, you know, helping others in our communities, being in nature more, I don't know, all these kind of things, buying into products that last, you know, making things that really,
I mean, what's, you know, amazing is that sounds epic. Like, when you talk about, you know, the future, that's the other thing, is the Green New Deal and all these opportunities. There are opportunities for the world to be better. There's nothing, you know, when you talk about the things that could change, I don't see what would be wrong. More green spaces, a shorter work week, less rubbish, spending more time with friends and family, growing your own food, eating healthier, being outdoors more, cycling more.
More parties in the street.
More parties. Like, tell me what
is
wrong.
What's the downside?
Yeah, what's the downside? But that's the point. Yeah. I still don't see anyone. You know, oh yeah, but you know,
there's no downside to this.
You're being naive. Tell me what is naive about any of those things.
There is no downside. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
It's just something, except, you know, the money flows are going to have to change. I mean, that's the thing, because if we're going to buy less stuff, we're going to make less stuff. People are going to have to earn less money, particularly at the tops of these businesses. We're going to have to distribute cash better so that there is ability for more people to work less, but just to have enough to sustain themselves. How much do you really want to earn? Like, would you rather work 3 days a week, you know, and have this kind of drop in the salary? You know, these discussions are going on, I think, and they need to go on, because again, it's like, if everyone says, well, you know, we can't give people time to do good things because we're driving this engine, but actually, how much do people want? And maybe there's ways to start freeing up, or just, we've got to loosen the demand for perpetual growth, you know, and money and debt and interest on debt is what's driving all of this, right? Because all of us are somehow, you know, if you're privileged, you might have a mortgage. If you're not, you've got like payday loans or whatever. All of it is driven by interest. And so I would just encourage people to carve off a little bit of time and start being a bit more generous with your creativity, not thinking about money or awards or all that stuff that we tend to think about, and just think, where could I give now this stuff that I want to do? And that's actually something we're now trying to do on the back of the climate strikes with this idea of FridayFuture.love, which is, can we get to it? Can we imagine a time now where we can give a day a week? And those of us that are salaried or whatever, could we gift 20% of our time to helping change this story, to helping shift this system to something that's going to work for everyone? And that's what we're now trying to develop as an idea. So hopefully everyone will want to get involved.
Hi, I'm out of the office.
Because I'm out of patience.
And we are out of time.
This is a climate crisis.
So I'm out on strike.
I'm out on strike.
Out of class.
Out of home.
In the streets.
For climate justice.
For real solutions.
For all our futures.
Join the climate strike.
Are you with me?
So let's now talk about some actual creative work. And a recent one was a campaign for Timberland. Who's going to pick up on that? Is that Zach? Are you going to do that?
I'll talk about that. This is the campaign to plant 50 million trees by 2025. It's part of their kind of wider global mission called Nature Needs Heroes. And the reason I like it, and I think it's a really good campaign, is because it's actually dealing with a need, which is to, you know, massive replanting and reforestation of parts of the world. We need that to be done. And what I like, and I think Dan talked about it earlier, was that they're not just thinking, there is a reason for them to be doing that, but this is a global problem, and they're seeing how can they help solve this global problem, and as a consequence help their brand. And that's what I quite like about this, is it feels like they are putting the problem first and then how they're going to be involved in it and how they might help solve it. Often it's the other way around. We're going to use purpose in a way to try and help us, you know, communicate this random part of our organization. And, you know, the actual issue of, I think it's called the Great Green Wall in Africa, where they're trying to build this huge, or trying to plant this huge swathe of trees to help mitigate climate change, biodiversity, etc. It's something that's really, really needed. And what's great about the Timberland work is also they're not planning on doing it by 2050. You know, from what they're saying is this is 50 million trees by 2025. That is 5.5 years away. It's kind of easily within reach. And so I like the ambition for it. I like the fact that it's solving a real problem, and it's adding to, you know, help mitigate some of the issues. The from a kind of marketing point of view, I would imagine what is great is that it relates very well to what their product is designed about, which is an outwear foot brand. It makes sense that you would protect outdoor spaces. It kind of ties it in. But for me, as you know, in the career shift that I've changed from kind of working in the commercial sector to more kind of campaigning, and is I don't care that much about how it ties into the brand as much, you know, to make it all. What I really care about is that it's a really good thing that they're doing and is actually going to help the earth in which we all live on. And that's what I think is really interesting, and those are the kind of campaigns that are really beginning to excite me, is like, is this something that is needed? Would people in that space, would the World Wildlife Funds, the you know, the Greenpeace, the UN, the people that are trying to kind of help the planet kind of recover and regenerate, would they say, well done, Timberland? And I think they probably would say that this is a good thing for them to do.
But what you've just said, I don't believe, I'm trying to think as a consumer here, I don't believe there's any brand that could not play a role in the environmental space, because it is such a fundamental part of our lives. You're right, Timberland, it's a very small step from the Timberland brand to thinking about outdoors. But for some brands, fashion brands, I mean, because it is so pervasive, isn't it, that everybody can play a role in it.
There's a fantastic book called Drawdown, which talks about the solutions, some of the kind of solutions to climate change. And one of them, you know, there's been a lot of noise about it the last, you know, couple of months, is massive reforestation is a way that we can help kind of halt kind of or slow down climate change. And it's really, really important. You know, the war on plastics and stuff is great, and of course it's you know, it's a key thing, but it's not like, you know, it's something that we've all latched onto rather than something that's going to, in my mind, really help deal with some of the big kind of global issues. And I think that's why it's kind of great. You know, they could remove the plastic eyelets from their boot, or stop putting a tag on the, you know, the blah blah boot, you know, and, or make a recycled lace and that kind of stuff. It's really great. You know, it is, you know, it's worthy. But to plant 50 million trees, to take over, you know, to help reforest a huge swathe of Africa, that's kind of impactful, and that's really going to suck up some carbon.
Yeah, and there was you're seeing the Global Adaptation Report, a UN thing, which again is looking at exactly what that. So it's looking at kind of like, this shit's coming, climate's breaking down, even if we stop everything now, we've got to prepare, you know, it's coming, the world is heating. And so how to adapt to all these changes, and this kind of rewilding, these, you know, regenerating of ecosystems, which are, you know, they're proven technologies. Carbon capture storage has never even been proved at scale, right? You know, but forests, mangroves, all these things, you know, they've got millions of years, they work, right? So actually there's a solution that we could just start helping accelerate. And that's a lot of that stuff is in that report. And I would love to see this connection now between business and brands. Okay, if this is what the science tells us needs to happen, how do we play on that knowledge now? What can we do, you know, to help these things happen? So I think the example is actually easy. I did hear the other day, I don't know if it's true, but I heard that in Ethiopia they planted 350 million trees in a day recently.
Yeah.
So as a thing, so it's just kind of think maybe like Timberland should be teaming up with Ethiopia. Yeah. And
people are doing it.
Yeah, but you know, it's good.
Sorry, I've got this book, Drawdown, which is the most comprehensive plan ever proposed to reverse global warming. And it's kind of increasingly becoming the Bible for people trying to combat climate crisis. I would advise everyone to have a look. Really kind of quite a meaty book, but actually kind of talks through the different solutions. And, you know, this is the other thing about, we've kind of talked about a lot of these, is there are lots of solutions. This, you know, yes, things are happening, but we can still kind of slow it down, halt it, try and combat it. We don't have to be defeatist. And yeah, the book goes into all the different ways that you can do this.
We have some friends out in California who've developed a thing called Sea Trees, which is basically, if you look at mangroves, seagrass, kelps, they're actually, like, I think sort of up to 5-10 times more effective at drawing down carbon than trees on land. And so they've built this platform which is enabling kind of the reforestation of the ocean through redeveloping mangroves and all this kind of stuff. And so they're looking for brand partners at the moment. They've built it, they've got the programs running all over the world. They're looking for brand partners now to support that. So there's, as Zach said, you know, the beautiful point of this moment in time is there's enormous amounts of amazing solutions out there. They're just not getting the airtime and the airplay that they need.
We were looking at some work earlier, and one that we all loved was an unusual one, an anonymous campaign, which is, without taking too much away, it appears to be a letter to Jeff Bezos. Tell us about that one.
Yeah, time. And I think the reason it stands out, based, you know, again on this chat we've been having this morning about, you know, can we be more courageous with our creativity? Can we do stuff off brief? Can we do stuff that's not being asked of us? And so this thing, I think it popped up literally a week ago on the web, and it's a anonymous letter that was actually sent to Jeff Bezos at Amazon, and a lovely little 60-second piece of film.
Dear Jeff, Amazon is still on fire. The other one, yours is doing okay. We have an investment opportunity for you. Buy the Amazon rainforest. Buy it, then don't touch it. Instead, hold it in trust for the world. Protect all the plant life and wildlife that help us to breathe. Protect the indigenous people whose knowledge is priceless. You have a strong brand, Jeff, but what do you want your legacy to be? This or this? This or this? Or this? Or this? Now's your chance to give something back to the rainforest that gave you a name and so much more. So do it, Jeff. Invest in your legacy before everyone figures out where all the cardboard comes from. Talk soon, the world.
It's really, really well done. Yeah. And it's from an anonymous group out in the US. And what I love about it is there's no money, there was no brief. It's just they've just decided to do this on the back of the burning of the Amazon, which continues. And you know, it's a cheeky but lovely, playful call to Jeff Bezos to use the influence and wealth and that company has amassed through, you know, obviously many things, but using this kind of the Amazon brand, if you like, and trying to, it's a call to say, like, you know, safeguard it, fund the protection of that of the Amazon, stop it being necessary for people to destroy it. So fund, you know, make it create value in restoring it and regenerating and protecting it, and protect all the indigenous people that are there. And I think it's just a really great example of people starting to step up and say, look, you know, this stuff matters, we care about this, we have the capability to use our influence and creativity to actually, you know, make this stuff, you know, make more people aware of what we're facing right now as a culture. So yeah,
have you seen it have any real impact, as in, you know, the classic, I'm going to say it's a planner's ad bin, but by the way, obviously, because the proposition was Amazon should save the Amazon. I would have written that, obviously. Have you seen any action? I mean, are Amazon customers kind of getting behind it and going, actually, this is a good idea? Amazon could save the Amazon.
Well, you know, it's too early to tell, but what you are seeing is this Amazon workforce publicly talking about going on strike next Friday, and there's a whole bunch of stuff on YouTube about this. There's loads of Amazon employees all over the world who've made this film, which basically saying they don't think their employer is doing anywhere near enough to meet the problems that we're facing as a society and a civilization. They also believe, they think that as a company they could do amazing things, not just around their business, but, you know, what we've talked about the problems that we're facing. So I think it's super interesting. And is this piece of content, is that provoking that? Is it helping this spread? I think there's something going on. And I think the ideas like this can only help.
And has Jair Bolsonaro said yes or no to it? Because, I mean, I know a bit about him because my husband's Brazilian, and so I do follow the Brazilian politics. It's kind of, yes, he might take the money, actually, because Bezos does have enough to buy the Amazon. Bolsonaro kind of wants a bit of cash.
Yeah, I mean, for me, what's interesting is ideas like this are making more people think differently about what's going on in the world, joining dots on their consumption, joining dots on corporations, joining dots on our ecology. And I think, so for me, that's more of that. Does the money go in and protect it? I don't know yet.
But I think, you know, again, thinking of, you know, listeners to this podcast, is that piece of film, yeah, helps you join the dots. Maybe it means that when you're chatting to whoever your senior contact at Amazon is, you know, the regional blah blah procurement manager for your products that are sold on Amazon, maybe it becomes a conversation. Actually, how could you and your Amazon counterparts start to think about this? You know, the lungs of the earth, it has been on fire, we're talking about all these major issues. Now has never been a better time to start to kind of bring that together. So, you know, what this is all about is small conversations, making it legitimate for you to have that conversation over a business meeting to talk about, now what are we going to do about, you know, the environment and the climate? And actually, look, so that's where this kind of this amazing idea these guys have done can, you know, plant a couple of seeds. And I hope that it's the beginning of a bigger campaign. It's, you know, inspired me to think about how can I as an Amazon customer start to bring that in. And it's, yeah, it's multiple conversations and, you know, hopefully those new connections, and someone might talk to someone senior at Amazon UK who will take that to someone senior at Amazon US, and, you know, quickly it can move up. You know, I worked for Amazon at one stage, and it moves up the Amazon food chain pretty quick.
Yeah, as it should. Well, let's not forget, Amazon is an advertising space. There's no reason why people couldn't place things on Amazon that actually amplify this as well. Isn't Amazon the world's second biggest search engine, or whatever the stat is? I forget all my kind of big stats. That's one of them, isn't it? So people could put stuff on Amazon because it is a marketplace to amplify what you've just said.
Yeah. I think that people are, as the conversation we've had today about the sort of the overconsumption model that that's happening here, people are starting to join the dots. Okay, this stuff is going to be changing, and so the person in the street, I hate using that, we've talked about, let's not talk about consumer, but you know, the people that are out there buying stuff are starting to kind of figure out where the problems lie. And so, you know, this means, you know, businesses need to be responding because this stuff's coming, the change is coming.
And have you seen anti-consumerist, I'm using the language, but it's the shorthand. Have you seen anti-consumerist stuff on Amazon?
On the actual marketplace?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, but they filter the ad platform. I'm sure they're not allowed to have anything that doesn't promote mass yeah. consumption on there. It's one of their tags. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think it's such a provocative and beautifully done piece of work. Going back to this piece of anonymous content, I think I would expect to see a response from them at a very high level at some point in the next week, in combination with the things that are going on with the factory workers as well. I would be very surprised, because it's such a beautifully written and very sort of human form of style of communication. I think I'd like to see Jeff actually sort of say something back.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, that piece of content, the richest man in the world, you know, built his business on this fantastic name of this forest that's in huge trouble. The person that is, you know, burning it is saying, we need the money. He's got loads of money. They're saying they're burning it because they need the money. There must be a way to bring them together. Like, yeah. If ever there was a brand and a purpose kind of, you know, the waiting to be answered, it's like, come on, dude. Like, that's what's so perfect, is you can just... It doesn't need explaining. It's just
Exactly. And what's so beautiful, I think, again, about these ideas, going back to what we've talked about, it's kind of more just courageous expressions going on. You've got the Amazon employees that are speaking to cameras. You've got this content, this beautiful content that's been developed by this little anonymous crew. None of this was planned. But, you know, but when people start expressing how they're really feeling about something, I think in ways that aren't, again, they're not violent expressions. They're quite playful, they're human, they're open. You know, who knows the shifts that can happen? I think this is how things change. It's multiple interactions from different groups. So I think it's really interesting. It'd be really interesting to see how this plays out.
So before we say goodbye, I'd just like to leave us all with some possible things to do. So I work in marketing. What can I do if I want to take my first tentative steps to taking my brand on a more sustainable kind of future?
So from our point of view at Glimpse, you know, we see ourselves as a kind of a home for creative people looking to do that. Very simply is you can join our mailing list and become part of the collective. We welcome everyone. Everyone's skills and input is welcome, and we run kind of hacks, different events, and we kind of let you know about that. I think the second and maybe even more important is just start having the conversation with your colleagues and your peers and your clients and your CEOs, and start being able to talk about these things. And then the third is, you know, we talked about, is being kind of courageous and experimenting. You know, let's start to try and see, you know, how we could make, you know, if you can't make it the big marketing spend, could you do little experiments in certain markets or in certain channels, and just to start kind of keep pushing and keep trying, really.
And if I work in a creative media agency in the agency world, what can I do there to help my colleagues take those steps too?
So you can join the Glimpse Collective, you can join Good For Nothing, go to goodfornothing.com, sign up there. There's all kinds of stuff going on, not just in London, but we've got cities, chapters all over the place. Go to FridayFuture.love. This is where, you know, we've just focused on the climate strikes with the young, but we're, you know, our intention is to try and encourage creative missions on every Friday. That's where we want to get to with this. So again, go to there, you can drop your mail in and we'll be in touch with you on that front. Or just reach out as well for a conversation. You know, we're always open just to help people kind of, you know, get some of this stuff out, some of the stuff that they're kind of freaking out about or some of the questions they're carrying. It's messy, as we've said, so just get in touch. Yeah.
And then most importantly is next Friday, so this will be Friday the 20th, across the country, across the world, we are inviting people, organizations to strike for the day and come out and support youth climate strikers across the country. Facilitate that in any way which you can. So as Dan said, we've got lots of different kind of campaigns. I forget the URL again.
FridayFuture.love.
And it's got lots of different kind of ways you can do that. But yeah, most simple is encourage your employees, your friends, your family, staff, whoever, to kind of come out next Friday and let's start to kind of try and raise the voice of this issue.
So let's all try and be out there Friday the 20th of September, depending when you've downloaded your version of the podcast. Is it just in London? Where can I go and be in the streets with my kids? It sounds like I need a kid. Can I have one of yours, Dan?
Can have all of them. If you're in the UK, go to uksn.org, which is the organising body for the young strikers in the UK, and you've got all the strikes that are going on all over the country. I think there's going to be a couple of hundred at least locations. The big one is starting in London, but they're happening everywhere in most cities, and do go. I mean, they're asking for the adults. This is not, you know, this is the invitation for adults to join. I'd also just say, because a lot of people we've been speaking to, you know, some people are nervous, go on strike, I've never done that before, can I go on a march? All I'd say is the energy is unbelievable, and if you have to experience this change that the young are asking for, and I think it will really help people, it will shift something. If you get out on the street for a couple of hours, I say check out on our site, there's loads of ways that you can strike, there's loads of ways you can express your support for this stuff. But if you can get out and join the youngsters, you don't have to take a kid with you. There'll be plenty out there. But take everyone, take your mum, take, I mean, it's, that's the thing, you know, everyone's feeling something. I mean, look what's going on politically, right? This is a chance to show that there is something more beautiful waiting to be birthed, and I think it's the kids are leading the charge.
A fascinating discussion, dare I say possibly one of the most fascinating we've done on the podcast, and I'm going to put it out there, would you guys come back in say 6 months time? Because I think this is something we should check in on, because I'm keen that we show positive outcomes and not just talk about it.
Yeah, 100%.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.